I think getting them to understand that they're in business for themselves. I think getting them to understand that they're not a salesperson working at a dealership and understanding that you are in your business for yourself. So the things that you're doing to turn on this, the light of your storefront is what's going to attract business to come in.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Sensei Playbook. We have a special treat in store for you guys this week. And I'm going to go on record and say that this episode is going to be packed with so much value, you may want to share it with everyone you know in the automotive industry. We're going to get insights today from a sales professional that holds the current world record for the most cars sold in 1 year, 1,582 cars sold in 1 year. You'll hear how he has accomplished this incredible feat by providing experiences so extraordinary for his clients that he only operates on referrals. He truly creates raving fans from his customers. You're going to hear the story of how he met an automotive trainer at a seminar, and this meeting changed his professional career. This encounter took him from an average of 30 cars a month to over 60 cars a month, then 70, then 90, and eventually 100 cars a month. Folks, it is with great honor to have with us today the one and only current world record holder and most cars sold in 1 year, Ollie Rita, and joining us, his friend in training and coaching extraordinaire, Damien Boudreaux from the good state of Louisiana. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. How y'all doing?
Good to be here.
Grateful to be on here.
Great to have you.
Let's start with the backstory. How did you guys team up?
It was in 2010, Chris. And you remember how I used to just go do seminars? As a matter of fact, you were at my first seminar where all three people showed up. Me, the guy who did the recording, and the customer. I got good after a while, and people started coming to my seminar. One day, I'm doing a seminar in Detroit, and somewhere on this side of the room, there was this person. I didn't pick him up early in the thing, but somewhere around 15 minutes to 30 minutes, I'm watching this guy. He is taking notes, Chris. Oh, Jesse, I'm going to tell you something. It was like writing the Bible. It was like, oh, my Lord, he's writing down everything. He ain't missing a word. I am on today. Right. And I'm watching this kid, man. He is just writing it down. He was so excited to be at my seminar. And at the end of the seminar, he came up to me and he kind of challenged me. He says, that stuff's true. See, he said, that guy in Nashville, Greco, he's for real. I said, yeah, he's for real. You want to talk to him? He said, I can talk to him. He said, yeah, so I put him on the phone. They talked around, and I had never met Ali. I didn't know who Ali was. I just knew he loved me from the moment he saw me, is what happened. Ali.
You know, there's always a couple of versions of this story, right? There's his perspective, and then there's mine. Well, you know, he's right about the seminar. I was reluctant to go to his seminar. He says, you know, I was busy. I was doing 30 cars a month, and I'm a busy salesperson. And at the time said, I signed you up for this seminar, and you're going to go see this, you know, Damien Boudreaux guy. And I'm like, I don't even know who that is, and I've never heard of him, and I don't know about no seminars. And I'm good. I got three deliveries, and my manager, thank God, one of the car gods of my life, he said, no, you're going. You're not allowed to deliver another car until you go and go to the seminar. So, you know, I was kind of forced to go to the seminar, and Damien starts, you know, his whole relationship type selling spiel, and this is what, you know, people around the country are doing. And I'm thinking, I was doing 30, and the industry said that 30 is elite. Nobody was talking about 50 and 60 and all these numbers. And I was like, somebody's being lied to. Either I'm being lied to, or this guy's not telling the truth. Let me find out. And, you know, he starts hitting all the right buttons, relationship selling, community, you know, doing the right thing, being, you know, transparent and intentional. And he starts talking all this stuff. And after the seminar, he's right. I did pull him aside, and I'm like, hey, is that guy real? Did that guy really sell 60? Because I don't know about you guys. If somebody did something, I believe that I can accomplish it. So, you know, I asked him, I said, is that guy real? He's like, yeah, we can put him on the phone now. And, you know, that is factual how it happened. And, you know, from that moment on, I think we built such a strong relationship, but that was the beginning.
Tell them how many you were doing, your 10 years in the business. Tell them a little bit about your journey up to that point, right?
I mean, at that point, I was averaging 30 cars a month. And again, the industry has said 30 is elite. That's pretty much all you should be able to accomplish is 30. And, you know, then, you know, as Damien started talking about Greg doing 60, that's when I started, you know, piquing my interest. Like, you know, if somebody's doing 60, and I believe now I can do 60. And that was probably that was the first time that I ever believed that more was possible, because nobody was really talking about that. Nobody was saying there's people doing 50 and 60. They're just saying get to 30 and you're good. So, you know, not until that moment when I met Damien, and that's why I say, you know, Scott Montgomery, my manager, was a car god, because, you know, having me go to that seminar and hearing Damien talk about real life people doing these numbers really shifted my belief system in what was possible. And it wasn't long thereafter, you know, when I was doing 30, that me getting to 60 was attainable, because it was only like I maybe months after that I believed it. And I've never done more than like 45 or something. So, you know, at that time, you know, that's what the biggest shift of my career was, is hearing him say somebody else is doing it and then me actually believing that.
Yeah. And imagine, Chris, since 2016, right? Since 2016, we met in 2010, right?
Yep.
25, 30 cars a month. Since 2016, he's never sold less than 100 cars every month.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was the first stretch goal?
Yeah, tell him the exercise.
I heard a story, like you called Damien when you hit a certain number. And what was that? What was that first time you called him?
Those phone calls did not go very well. So we would call them the magic phone call. So the first time I hit 60, I called Damien, and I'm like Damien, you're not gonna believe this, man. I hit 60, and he's like, all right. He says, well, what's your next number? And I'm like, what do you mean, what's my next number? I hit 60. I said I'm gonna hit 60. I wrote down on your pad that I'm gonna hit 60. I hit 60. He's like, well, what's your next number? And I'm like, I never thought about it. I just was shooting for 60. He goes, well, do you feel like there was more? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, what's your next number? And I'm like, 75 or 72 at the time. And he goes, all right, call me back when you hit 75. Hangs up the phone. I'm like,
that's not the truth.
Yeah, we talked a little in between there, but that was the gist of the conversation. Yes, he's like, what is the next number? And I hit 72, and then I call him back, and I'm like, David, I hit 70. And he's like, all right, well, what's your next number? And I'm like, I talked about this next number stuff. He's like, I hit the number that we said we were going to go after. He's like, well, what's your next number? And of course, we'd go over, like, what felt right, what felt wrong, what did you change? Processes did you feel like you had to do? Is there more room for growth? And what does that next number look like in a nutshell? And I'm like, well, if I did, you know, I think it was 72. And I'm like, well, I think 90 is possible. And he's like, all right, call me when you get 90. Hangs up the phone and gets this. It went on for so long. And then, you know, after I think I hit 100 and something, I'm like, you know what? Before I call Damien, let me call my mom, because I think she'll be a little bit more proud of me. She should be happy. Let me give her a call first before I get rejected by this guy, you know, hanging up on me again. But they went on for so many years. But with every one of those conversations, I would pick up some magic, and we would call them magic phone calls. But I would pick up some magic and some nuggets, and I would learn a lot about myself. I would learn a lot about, you know, the process and how I can evolve and how I can grow. And, you know, Damien's just a master at his craft, being able to pull out the best version of me and helping me understand what it would take to get to that next number.
So am I trying to do? What do people normally do? They have a bad month and they beat themselves up. Or they have a great month and they just go, and the next month they maybe not do so good. And what all the magic phone call is, and I've done it with a lot of salespeople, is to say, all right, let's look at what you felt like when you got to work. What was your energy level? What was your mindset? What was the three steps you took at the first part of your day? What could you have done better? One of the questions that I always ask, especially when he got up to the 140, 150, 160 numbers, is, okay, so if you had to say you could have been more efficient or more productive, how many more could you have done? And he would literally, he would just back up and he'd go, yeah, I probably could have done 20 more. Yeah. I could have done 20 more, but it was a constant breaking of it, rebuilding it, breaking it, rebuilding it based on what I did great, not what I sucked at that I needed to improve on. And that's the benefit of the magic phone call, right? That's all I was doing to him, is getting him to be aware of his brilliance. His brilliance is what he needs to
do. Raising these beliefs from where, that's fascinating.
What was the major unlock that you had, Ollie, that took you from like 30 to 60.
It's so simple. It's so crazy and simple. It's literally believing that that was possible. Because for a long time, our industry always, you know, has stated that 30 is the elite. And they still do. And they still say 30 is elite. 30, you can pick up a pen and you can have a job anywhere in the country. It doesn't matter if you're averaging 30. And they put this ceiling on it because they've never, ever talked about that more was possible. And they've always said, there's so many hours in a day, 2 hours per delivery, so many cars you could talk to, only so many people you can talk to. Well, nobody's ever evolved the actual process of how to break that 30 mark. So, you know, the breaking point for me with the aha moment was when Damien started talking about, you know, the somebody doing 60, right? Because I'm like, okay, that's what's possible now. It's a game changer because now I know that 60 is possible. And when I did 60, then we talked about the next number, and it was always possible to hit that next number with evolving, like what Damien just said, is you know, becoming more efficient, figuring out where the gaps were, figuring out how to do something more efficiently, faster. So, you know, the aha moment really was the first time I ever wrote down the number 60 because somebody else had achieved that was the first time I ever believed that that was possible. Had I not written that 60 number down, in my mind, 30 was all I was ever chasing because that's all that was ever presented to me was saying that you do 30, you're good. We don't have to pay attention to you. Just keep doing your 30 and we'll leave you alone. But nobody talked about more.
Part of that. Yeah. So basically what Ali needed was he needed to have a vision of what he wanted. Right? This is what's possible. I believe in this, right? I'm aware of it. Right? And then he needed to know who he was at his best, right? Chris, you've done this exercise. I've had your children do this exercise, right? Who are you at your best? That's just got to show up. He was doing a lot of the things that I teach. He just was never validated to go, oh my God, what I'm doing is what he's saying. Right? And so what was he doing? And why is it you can't get past 30? You can't get past 30 in a traditional selling model because you're waiting on transactional customers that belong to the dealer that you need to take care of and treat like royalty. And they don't know you. They don't like you. They don't trust you. They don't think you understand them. Your motives are for yourself and not them. So you have this battle at a 20 to 35% closing ratio and a 2-hour to 4-hour time frame of selling a car. You cannot get to the numbers that I'm teaching if you're waiting on those people. So selling Ali or teaching Ali says, okay, never wait on another dealer-driven opportunity forever. Never wait on somebody who doesn't know you. If they're not, you need to turn them. And that is a shift in the psyche that allows him to not be at the mercy of the long game with a customer that doesn't know him. Everybody comes in, gives him a hug. They talk about the University of Michigan football or Detroit Lions or whatever. And the next thing you know, or community or whatever. And the next thing you know, Ali's saying, well, why are you here? He said, oh, I need a new Suburban. Oh, I need a new truck. Or I need a new Cadillac. Right? And then it's 20 minutes from there, they're gone, right? So, because it's all relationship selling.
So let's unpack that. When y'all first meet a new student or member, like at a seminar, and they hear 100 cars a month, that sounds almost unbelievable to them, right? How do you get them to conceptualize going from units, maybe 20 units on a great month, to 100? How do you change that belief?
You don't. That's exactly what happened to me. Because if Damien would have came in and said, you know, I'm doing 30 and here's a person doing 100, I wouldn't have ever thought that I could get to that number. It's too big of a gap between 30 and 100. Well, 30 to 60, I already did 45. So I'm like, okay, I already did 45. So another 15 is very attainable. It's very possible. But how do I make that my average now? So, you know, it's always what we always talk about is getting to one level at a time. So if you're at 12, we've got to get you to 18. If you're at 18, we get you to 25. You're never going to overnight sensation this number from 25 to 50. It's just not going to double that fast. As you get to the higher numbers, it does happen quicker. As you get to, like, you know, 100 and you can get to 120, you can add 20 or 30 to that number pretty quick because you're multiplying and dealing with so many more people. But when you're at 12, you just got to focus on getting to 18. That's your goal. So then in 6 months, you're at 18, and then 6 months later, you say, okay, how am I going to get to 25? That's your goal. And you people need to understand that it's one level at a time with process changing, and your business will evolve over time to get you to that 100. Because we do have other people that, you know, we're at like 40, 50, have achieved 100. We've seen it done. But it evolves and it takes time. It, you know, it takes obviously some training in there, but that's how you get there.
So let's move past the numbers for a moment. What's the starting point for a salesman? What do you change in that salesman's?
I think getting them to understand that they're in business for themselves. I think getting them to understand that they're not a salesperson working at a dealership, and understanding that you are in your business for yourself. So the things that you're doing to turn on the light of your storefront is what's going to attract business to come in. So we get them, you know, embedded in their community. We get themselves throughout community and doing the work that it needs to take to get yourself known, to build these relationships throughout your community. So then you're not selling from that transactional sale like Damien's talking about. And, you know, to get the ultra high numbers, it's very difficult to hit 100 if you're doing transactional sales. I mean, it's very difficult to do it the traditional way. You have to adopt this relationship type selling in order to get to those numbers, because everything changes, right? Your closing ratio changes. The amount of time you're spending with people changes. So the whole idea is to get them to understand you're building a business, you're planting the seed today so it can flourish in years to come.
Well, I would like to hear like the community involvement, because I think that is a huge part of like how to expand your network. Can you give us some examples of a community involvement?
Yeah, of course. In a lot of it, like I started in 2001. So I was able to work alongside a guy named Jerry Turfey, who was very, very good at community engagement, which means he was attending, you know, charity events. He was attending, you know, weddings. He was attending a lot of these things that were going on in the community. And, you know, he would build relationships through that avenue. And then it wasn't so much he was gaining car sales. He was gaining friends. He was gaining relationships. So I was able to kind of witness that early on. I remember the first time I went to a charity event, and, you know, I come back, it was like 2,000 people there. And I come back to Jerry and I'm like, what a waste of time. I went there and I didn't sell anything. And he's like, well, you can't go there thinking you're going to sell a car. He goes, that's not the idea. That's what I thought. I had business cards with me. I'm going there trying to meet people. I'm thinking I'm going to sell something. I'm like, nobody even talked to me. He's like, you have to organically build your reputation with people, not Ali the car salesman, but Ali the person. And, you know, he said, it's not going to happen overnight. And, you know, so I slowly started, you know, embedding myself in the community. Well, then I meet Damien in 2010, and that's really when we started hitting the community a lot harder than, you know, I was previously. We started advertising. We started showing up anywhere we advertised. So if we were going to advertise at a high school football game, I would be present at the game. If I was at the community center, I would be present at the community center. If I was doing something with the local police department, I would physically be at that police department. So a lot of people do ask that question, Chris. They're like, you know, well, where do I start? You start anywhere. You start at the schools. You start at the, you know, public service. You start, you know, at football games. You start anywhere.
You're not at the dealership waiting for you're out.
Nothing's going to happen sitting there waiting for people to come in. You have to create it. The idea later, as I'm learning from Damien, the idea wasn't that I needed to know all 2,000 people at that event. The idea was, how do I get all 2,000 people to know who I am? That was the idea. So I did not have to go in there saying, I got to go meet every person, rub elbows with them. So then we started brainstorming, well, how do I get all 2,000 people to know who I am? So then we're like, okay, well, let's get on stage. Okay, how do we get on stage? You ask. You literally say, I want to present a scholarship to you know, two students, you know, give this big goofy check with your name on it, and you're on stage. And all of a sudden now 2,000 people's eyes are on you, and you're presenting and you're showing them that you care about why they're there. I wasn't there on stage selling a car. I was just there building my relationship, building my reputation. But the problem we have is most people give up so early, like I was going to. But I had somebody that helped me and understand it a little bit more. that there's no instant gratification in doing this. Still 24 years later, I'm still doing things in the community to give back. Now I don't have to do it like I did before, but now people are asking for me to come to these events. It creates more attraction, and you know, but they're a lot of fun to do also.
I read something you said about Jerry, and I guess it was that he taught patience and listening. Is that right?
I've learned that. Yeah, of course, man. Patience is a tough thing to understand, right? I think it does come with maturity. It comes, you know, evolves a little bit as you grow as a person. But I feel like if you can master patience, you really could master a lot of things. And, you know, Damien's taught me a lot also about being patient and about, you know, listening to understand and not listening just to respond. Things do take time to develop at times, so you can't rush certain things. You can't rush a customer. You can't rush, you know, your relationship. So a lot of things do come with patience and, you know, intentionality. That's one of the biggest things that, you know, I learned from Damien is what is my intention? So when I show up to work, you know, what is my intention going in there? But patience is so strong throughout a person's life in every aspect, not just business aspect, right? Patience with your kids, patience with your spouse, patience with your family, patience with your sibling, your friends. So if you're the one that can keep the composure and be patient and allow things to develop, I think you're a lot further ahead than most.
So let me give you a story about one of the myths of our industry that we don't subscribe to, right? And I don't teach, right? When he broke the world record, it was a big deal, right? And we kind of knew it was going to be a big deal. And to Ali's credit, he was very humble and got to be on Fox News with Stuart Vaughn. And as the guy's talking, he's asking questions as if Ali is a car salesman. And the contrast of the way he was approaching it and the way we are was like oil and water. It was so different. And the question got asked is, so sell me some car, right? Sell me some car. Sell me, I don't really want to buy the car, but just sell me a car. And I'll tell you the answer.
I said, I can't just sell you a car. I need to know more about you. I need to know, I have questions for you. You can't just sell something, right? How long you've been looking for a car? What type of car do you have? What size is your family? How far is your drive? Right? He didn't want to hear that. He's like, no. He goes, that's not how it works. I'm like, yes, that is how it works.
I mean, how you gonna make me buy it?
I'm not gonna make you buy it. I might talk you out of it. You know, I'm not gonna make you buy it. And that's the perception. The perception is that we're trying to sell something at all costs, regardless of what damage we're creating. And that was the perception. And that did, you know, kind of go a long way that I kind of held my ground there. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. And they didn't like the answer, but that was the truth. That's the only answer I really had was I need more information before I can sell you something.
Do you find that people come to your talks and your seminars with the same mindset of thinking, I can't wait to learn the scripts they're going to teach me or whatever that, you know, the trick.
It closes.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrong seminar.
Damien is faced with that all the time, right? Yeah, they're looking for a secret handshake or a secret close. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to hear that there's a lot of work behind it. A lot of people don't want to hear that it's, you know, mastering your craft and practice and learning it and educating yourself. And they're like, right, I got to do all that. And I'm like, yeah, you guys, it's not going to just come to you easily, right? You got to put in the time. You got to plant the seed and, you know, your future self will thank you. But that's the problem right now is everybody sees, you know, the handful of successful people and are like, well, I want to be that person, but they're not looking 20 years, you know, behind and saying, well, what did this person do to get here?
Let's talk about customer experience because, you know, we're in an industry where predominantly the customer experience is not a good one. In fact, John Krafcik, the former president and CEO of Hyundai North America, said that people would rather go get a root canal than to go to a car dealership
without the drugs.
So how do you what do you do different in terms of customer experience that the average salesperson does not do in your industry?
I mean, one, I care, right? One, I care about their well-being. I care about that person. I care about, you know, where they came from, you know, what direction they're trying to go into. It's not simply selling them a new problem, right? Because as Damian talks about it, they're coming in with a pain point to solve a problem. And my job is to solve that problem, not create a new one. And the problem is a lot of times we get caught up in just trying to sell them something that they do buy the wrong car. They do get in the wrong situation. They do get in the wrong lease or mileage or, you know, engine size, whatever the case is, because we didn't ask the right questions. If you ask the right questions and put somebody in as perfect of a scenario as you can put them in, then the experience ultimately changes just based off of that. And, you know, of course, our customer service skills, experiences are our main focus, and we want them to feel loved. We want them to feel like they were taken care of. We want them to feel they got the best deal they can possibly get, a fair deal for everybody. And we did it with, you know, transparency. So when you do it with all these things that emotionally tie with the customers, align with their energy and align with what they're trying to do, you're not going to get those horror stories or those bad stories or, you know, saying, hey, you put me in this situation, right? So the fact that I'm helping them solve this problem, if I put them in a situation that I know is bad, I know it's going to come back and bite me because I'm the one that did it. So knowingly understanding that going into it, you know, I'm not trying to put anybody in a situation they shouldn't be in. And there's times where I'll slow them down. Like, okay, slow down for a minute. Let's make sure that this is the right decision. You're acting on emotions more than, you know, thinking logically. And people will thank me later because they're like, you're right. You know, maybe this doesn't make the most sense. Right? I mean, you're about to have a baby and you're coming in asking for a Camaro. Let's analyze this. But that comes with asking those questions, right? Let me ask those questions. And oh, you're a newlywed. When you guys plan on having a baby soon? Like, it's like we got to ask these questions so we can understand it. So I'm not trying to dig myself out of a hole because that's creating a problem for me too. So, you know, and then making sure that you're energetic, making sure that you're excited. We as professionals forget how exciting it is to actually purchase a vehicle. And until we buy one, like when I get a vehicle, but I'm on the full call and prep, I'm like, this car better be clean when it comes out. I'm like, I'm excited to take my car home. So, you know, we forget how exciting it is. So we need to make sure that we keep that high level of enthusiasm when a customer comes in to pick it up.
Let's assume for a second that we understand the superpower that Ali has, right? And it's not just this one thing, but his people trust him, right? They trust him emphatically. Now he's earned that, and they know him, so he has a certain level of leeway to gain that, right? To be more free with his people, right? His customer base. However, that same instrument, that same recipe, that's the same ingredients of trust that live on the relationship side and live on the transactional side. So as a salesperson, as a manager, as a human, as a dad, as a mom, trust is a teachable commodity. It has five ingredients, right? So let's just talk about it from the sales perspective. Y'all okay with me doing a little teaching, Chris?
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
So let's look at trust, right? And the first ingredient of trust is that the human I'm working with feels like they're understood, or at least I'm trying to understand them, right? Well, the way I earn that trust is not what I say, but what I ask. The more questions I ask you, the more I will understand you, right? Chris, in our coaching, when you call me, I normally ask you 10 or 15 questions or 4 questions or 5 questions before I ever start talking to you about anything, right? Because I need to understand you, right? So a salesman's job is to ask great questions at the beginning of the relationship so that you understand them, or the customer at least says they're trying to understand me. And then the second part of that is motive. Ali is not trying to sell you anything. You want to buy today? Good. Don't want to buy today? Good. Upside down, looking for something? Don't matter. My motive is you. My motive is to serve you. If you walk into a dealership and you feel that the salesperson's motive is to take you down today, rip your head off, and throw up down your neck, they feel that energy, right? They feel that contention, so that doesn't build trust, right? The third ingredient of trust is character. And character is that intrinsic energy that we have of love. Now here's the secret to everything I give people permission to have. It is okay to love your people. It is okay to give them a hug, to shake their hand, to genuinely show up in love and care and compassion, empathy and understanding with no attached outcome. I'm here for you. Let me share with you. You feel energies. Customers who don't know you will know, there's just something else about this person that I feel like they care, right? So showing up intrinsically in your best self of caring, compassion, that moves toward those ingredients of trust. The fourth ingredient of trust is ability. And whether you've been selling for a long time or brand new, you definitely have abilities to serve people or they wouldn't be coming to your store. So get your managers involved. Ali has the ability to solve all kind of problems because he's doing it for so long. If you've been in the business for 5 years, I don't need to teach you how to sell a car. You probably have handled most objections you're ever going to face. What you don't know how to do is believe in yourself, believe in your customer, and manage and build trust forever. The fifth ingredient is track record. Once you get to this level that Ali is at when he was at 50 cars a month, everybody trusts him. He's got a track record of helping people. And so it just creates this. He's not going out to get business. He's a magnet for his community to come to him. He's not chasing customers because they feel like he has a track record to do it. But if salespeople, if you just start saying, what is the best way for me to connect with a fellow earthling when I first meet him and say, they're going to trust me? That's the five ingredients for the recipe. And it is a tasty treat. I promise you, right? He has that naturally with his humans that he does business with, right? You can have that as well on a transactional side.
A question about the trust factor is, do you operate 100% off referrals?
Yeah, I mean, for me, yeah, I don't take a dealer-driven opportunity. If they don't come in asking for me of some capacity, like somebody sent them a referral or a family member, then, you know, of course I assist them and I walk them over to a salesperson. But, you know, I haven't taken a dealer-driven opportunity, I think, since everything has been relational-based. So they're already, you know, they already know me. They already know somebody's already told them that they can trust me. So then the rest of it is up to us to make sure all of that is true. But everything I do now is relational.
Do you ask for referrals after the sale? Do you ask for referrals?
Yeah, but referrals, like, it's kind of a tricky thing with referrals because, you know, I know, everybody in the industry is always talking about ask for referrals. It's not really in our nature to really, you know, ask for things, right? Car salespeople in general are not the type to go out there and be like, yeah, give me 20 people's names, right? It's just a very difficult thing to teach and to have people do it with, you know, being themselves, with authentically being themselves. But, you know, of course you want referrals, but you can ask it in a more subtle way. Like, you know, of course, you know, if anybody, I would love to, you know, take care of any of your family or friends, you know, but I think if you left a lasting impression, an emotional purchase, those people are going to be out there telling that story, right? So I would much rather a person go out and tell a story, an emotional story about their buying experience, saying that, oh my God, you're not going to believe what Ali did. I had bad credit. He did this. Nobody in the country had the color and somehow he got it. Whatever the case is. In making these dreams come true for people, I want them out there telling that story. When they tell that emotional story, you know, during dinner with friends and family, these people naturally are going to want to gravitate towards you and do business with you. Much more different than saying, you know, hey, Chris gave me your number, said you might be interested in a car, you know, come and see me, right? So there's two different sides of it. And I know dealerships ask for the referral, but if you blow them away with your experience, I think you're naturally going to get these referrals coming your way.
So your stance is you delight them with an exceptional customer experience, and they send you everyone they know.
Yeah, of course, and they know part of the business is, you know, we love referrals and we love them to send their family and friends, and you know, you can ask them, did I do a great job for you today? And they, you know, getting that understanding from them, but I want it to be more of a natural aspect than me cold calling, you know, their family and friends. And, you know, what does that closure ratio really look like? Like, what is that, you know, give me 50 names. Let me call them all. What is that closure ratio? And, you know, versus them telling 50 people the story, what would that closing ratio look like in reality?
Do you ask for reviews, testimonials in your business?
Good to do it. You know, now with social media, I mean, social media is such a powerful tool that, you know, it's good to do that. I see a lot of people do, you know, these reviews online, and I know Google reviews are very important. You know, doing these video testimonials are actually, you know, a good idea. I haven't really had to do it because my come up was more in person. My come up was more, you know, before social media when I was pounding the pavement and putting in the hard work. Now with social media, you can, you know, streamline that pretty quick. But I still feel like there's that power of human touch that we're going to miss out on. I think that you need to be seen, and people need to know that you're real, and they need to understand you as a person and be able to touch you and hug you and love you before, you know, they're going to start doing business with you. I mean, I think probably in the next, you know, maybe 20 years, you're not going to have that many transactional sales anymore. I think with social media being in proximity of being in touch with a lot of people, eventually somebody's just going to always have someone to call to, right? If that makes sense. They're always going to have a family or a friend or somebody online. So it's a powerful tool. You got to use it properly, because if you use it improperly, like, you know, for the wrong reasons or for the reasons that they want you to use it for, to kind of get lost in it, you know, it could be a powerful tool, but it's definitely something that you have to do coming up now, being conscious of how to use social media and how to get it out there. But video testimonials are good.
Can you talk about the post-purchase experience and how important that is?
Yeah, I mean, somebody coming, you know, after the purchase, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it is. I mean, here's the thing. People are always like, how do you follow up with thousands and thousands of customers? Well, if your mother bought a car from you, would you have to call her every 3 days and tell her, hey, how's the car? If your brother bought a car from you, would you have to be like every 3 days, you know, how are you about to go? So when you're talking about relational, that's why it's so important to get yourself in this relationship type selling, is the traditional things that dealerships been doing since, you know, early times don't really apply as much anymore. So I don't have to call every single person that buys a car. I don't have to bombard them with emails. However, I use the tools from the CRMs that are in place to send out letters, to send out, you know, postcards. I use everything that the dealership has the tools that they have applied to, but it's not as important as it would for somebody doing a transactional sale to stay top of mind. To, you know, if you sold 12 cars, you can reach out to 12 people. It's easier. When you sell 130 cars and you're selling it back to back to back, it's hard to call that many people. So you become accessible, right? You become accessible to people, and you make sure that they understand that they can reach out to you anytime. And that's the way I've approached it. But I still use the dealership, you know, letters and birthdays and all the things that they have, but I don't physically have to feel like I have to call every person. Now, we have a department that calls and checks on people, but that's the dealership.
How big is your team?
Team right now, so, you know, when I broke the record, it was in 2017, it was two of us. It was just myself and Mirna, my assistant. So it was just two of us at that time. And we've since evolved, of course. She's evolved to a whole different role. Still on my team. She has two assistants that work under her that do admin work. And then I hired a salesperson. His name is Carlos. So he's on my team, and he has an assistant also that assists him. So, and we're still growing. I'm trying to add another two people this year to come on as salespeople, so I can continue growing.
That's awesome. Cool. You're averaging how many cars a month now?
We're still doing over 100 cars a month. Carlos, I think last year we finished with maybe like 1380, maybe close to 1400, maybe hit 1400. Carlos did 500 on top of that. So that would put us at, you know, 1900 combined. But then we're going to add another person to join the sales floor.
So you have a team within the team.
Team within the team. And it is truly, it's truly a business within a business. I mean, it's truly, you know, I'm running my own storefront. And even the dealership now, because of the mass volume that we have, treats it as its own department, because now there's this, like, we have a Chevy business, we have Cadillac business, we have used business, and we have Ollie's business. So everything has to be, you know, looked at from a business standpoint, you know, inventory control. So a lot of things that have to go into that. So they have to treat it as a separate department. But you know, when we look at like SFE numbers and the numbers that the manufacturer wants you to hit, you know, we play a pivotal role in that because, you know, they all want volume, right? So we're trying to attack the volume portion of it because that's the way everything is geared. But at the same time, we're very profitable. We're not, you know, not in a red at any point. So we're very profitable. We're continuing to grow through that. But you got to have the right dealership to be able to understand that vision. That's not an easy thing. That wasn't an easy sell when I was trying to build the team because it's really prior to me doing that, there was nothing for me to go off of. There was no blueprint that was out there that I could say, well, look at so-and-so is doing it. So really, we were one of the first to actually create that, of course, with Damien's help. And he was pushing me for years to get an assistant. And I just, you know, didn't know how to put it together and wasn't sure if that was the answer. And, you know, I waited a little bit longer than I should have. I shouldn't have questioned him at any point anyways. But, you know, finally when I did it, you know, it's not an easy ask, right? Getting dealerships to understand that, getting ownership to understand that. I have amazing owners that look at it like a partnership. Anything I've ever asked for, we've somehow, you know, tried to put it together and make sure that it was a, you know, it was a win-win, right? It needs to be a win for everybody involved, right? The dealership, myself, my team, my community, the ownership. So it needed to be a win for everybody. And, you know, now it's a lot easier. You know, a lot of people are doing, a lot of my friends across the country are doing it because they have this blueprint that was put in place. And it's really changed the way a lot of these dealerships do business.
COVID, I mean, these kids who came in to work during COVID, with all due respect, were the best salespeople in the whole world. They did numbers that they didn't even have to learn how to sell. I mean, it was like, welcome to Take It or Leave It Motors. I'm happy to help you. You want a truck? Sorry about that. We got a Suburban. I'll take it. Okay, $6,000 over at MSRP. No problem. Sign me up. They were genius salesmen. And then I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, they started to struggle a little bit late in the last 2 years.
So one of the questions that we ask in Discovery is, where would you rate your team's execution of customer experience? Because, you know, we're in the testimonial and review business of helping dealerships get those from their customers. But if you don't take, you know, if you don't provide an exceptional customer experience at the beginning, you're not going to get a testimonial or review. So we always ask the question, where do you rate your team on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being perfect? And in the past year and a half, that number has been a 3 to a 4. We very rarely hear anything over a 4 because COVID was a gift to the automotive industry. They were order takers, but now there's been a level set recently and people are having to sell again. They're having to get better.
So there's 3 challenges, right? The dealers are facing and the managers are facing and the salespeople bring to the table. Number one, they struggle with work ethic, right? And that is always tough if you don't have structure, right? So in addition to not knowing how to work, dealerships and managers aren't providing the structure. I mean, remember if you played high school sports, you know, when coach blew the whistle at 3:10, you were with this coach doing this exercise. At 3:20, he blew the whistle. You ran to the next coach. Everything was structured. So the day is structured. Well, salespeople come in and they're at the mercy of the wind unless they have a disciplined management team who builds the structure for them. So that creates work ethic if you have structure, and most dealerships don't have structure or work ethic. So building that into the program is important with younger salespeople. The third thing is mental toughness. And that ability to go and gut up, right? They're so afraid of failure and falling down and skinning their knee. They've never been given permission to do that. And middle management doesn't know how to be graceful and even keel to allow the failures to build the human. And so in my world, I'm back in-house, right? I'm back working inside of dealerships with my new president, who's a former car dealer, and he's working with the managers, and he translates what I'm saying to the salespeople. And we have to start building the foundation of the car business again, right? And included with that is that they need to understand that the business of their business is people and not cars. And how do they connect immediately the day they come into the dealership to their community, right? It's not repeats and referrals. Repeats and referrals are crumbs. Everybody talks about repeats and referrals. Ali's selling cars for 10 years. He would have starved with repeats and referrals, right? He just couldn't have made a decent living. Maybe 8 cars, 12 cars at his best. It's more his tribe of people, his community, that never bought a car from him, that never had been to the dealership, who he had connected to through basketball or sports or the kids or his family or church or wherever he was out in the marketplace, right? And so basically teaching salespeople early in their career that, look, here's the showroom floor, right? Now, it doesn't exist here. The showroom floor is everywhere. When you go to the cleaners, that's the showroom floor. When you go to the Outback Steakhouse, that's the showroom floor. When you are at the children's basketball game serving up nachos or gumbo or Chick-fil-A, you know, that is the showroom floor. And so take the showroom floor and make it part of your life. Be who you are at the gas station and the grocery store, the same person you are at the dealership. You shouldn't be, I'm putting my selling face on. And so when Ali, you want to add to this by talking about what we did with Carlos?
When he first started, when he first joined my team, he's never sold a car before. He wasn't in car sales. He actually owned a pool company. And our vision was, all right, so we're teaching a lot of this relationship selling. We're letting salespeople know that this is a great way to start. And you don't have to necessarily wait on, you know, dealer-driven opportunities if you get yourself out there in the community. So for the first couple months, we just had him just reach out to family and friends and just let them know what he's doing. We weren't putting him on the showroom floor. We weren't asking him to sell. We weren't getting him caught up in, you know, objections and not wanting to be in the business because he failed the first 3 months. We literally just wanted him to learn the lingo, understand how the dealership works, and to be involved in his community. And as we started doing that, I think 3 months in, people just started coming. And we just started advertising throughout the community. We started, you know, going to Cinco de Mayo parades. We started going to these restaurants, local restaurants. We put up billboards. We just wanted people to know where he was and what he had to offer. And we weren't really trying to sell anything. So Carlos, from the day he started to the present time, has only dealt with 100% relational. He's never answered emails or phone ups or walk-ins. Wow. It's literally been relational, 100% relational from the day he started. And his best month is 64 cars, and he's averaging, you know, almost 50 cars a month at this point. He did 500, a little over 500 last year. But that's, you know, that's what's possible if you approach it with this blueprint that Damien's talking about of educating yourself and getting involved in the community and doing it early and just allow people to see what you have to offer and how you can assist. But that's all we did with Carlos, and here 5 years later, never taking a deal-driven opportunity.
That's amazing.
So, Chris, we did get a question or two from our LinkedIn community, too, that we had said that we would ask.
Yep. Yeah. And then how can automotive professionals get a hold of that blueprint that you're describing?
Yeah, they can go to autotrainingacademy.com. They can go to YouTube and look up Damien Boudreaux. They can look up Damien Boudreaux on social media everywhere. I have content out there all over the place. I've written one book called Keep It Simple Selling. That is the recipe book that Ali followed to basically to get where he is. I mean, everything in that book is what, you know, I taught to all the high achievers I worked with. I have a second book because I had a really generous human one time, Chris, come up to me and say, how could I give back? How can I help? Damien, how can I help? And I said, oh my God, you can get on stage with me. You can speak with me. And so I invited Ali to come on stage. Oh. And it was a small audience, Chris. About 120 people in the room. And a small audience. And I'm telling you, deer in the headlines, he sucks. I'm telling you,
I'm a car salesman. I was no teacher. I don't know. Again, on stage with some Asian guy. I didn't know what was going on over there.
So because of that, we wrote a book.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had to write Don't have to put it in writing.
For your audience, Ali and I would like to give this book to your audience.
Yes.
Right? So it's a free download. So if they go to howtosell100cars.com and they scroll down to the bottom. Now, I'm going to try to sell them a book a couple of times. They got to go all the way to the bottom. And they put their email in. We'll send them a copy of the PDF from Ali and I, and they can read the book. And remember, this book is about getting to your next level. And how basically Ali overcame obstacles and other things. And then he and I have, I would say, 40-something hours of content in a program that we have that once a month, 3 years, almost 4 years, we got online. We talked about, okay, what's going on? What's happening? What are the obstacles? And there would be things happen in the industry that would cause things to go wrong, and there would be things happen in his life that were not very beautiful at the time, right? And we just talked through, and everything in there addresses salespeople's journey. And then my daughter, Anna Louise, indexed it to where if you're looking for a certain thing, you can go on a drop-down menu and find it out, and it'll tell you the episodes to go to. To find that, but that's how to sell 100cars.com.
The show notes.
Yeah, so, of course, we'll put it all in the show notes and make sure that.
And then, of course, I do seminars. And when I do a seminar in Detroit, Ali is on stage with me and answers questions generously. And, you know, we share our story and his story, and we try to answer questions based on where people are now, not where he is, because he's a freak, right? He's not part of normal life right now. Right? So he has to relate to where they are. Yeah. And then, of course, I do private in-house. And probably the best thing I do in the world is one-on-one coaching. And both you, Chris, and Ali can attest to the power of what that means. And, you know, that's a gift from God that I have.
For sure.
Mr. Miyagi. Yeah, it is.
For sure.
Random question is, you know, there are people that have all this content, like 40, 50 hours of content, and they're training AI agents on all of their content, right? So they basically just have like an AI agent that is like the best car sales trainer in the universe. And because they've got all this content they own, it's, you know, it's different than anything. You can't get on ChatGPT because it doesn't have access to that. I was just wondering if you guys have ever...
Absolutely not. We are working on that now. We are not. That is not. Yeah, not part of the plan, as far as I know.
Okay, got it.
The Ask Damien bot. Right? It's stuff that I created out of thin air, based on working with high achievers. Right. So it's very different, and I don't have to be worried about the FCC coming after me because I'm dishonest or dishonorable or teaching a word track that, you know. So all my stuff is pretty simple.
I was watching a LinkedIn post the other day, and it was a general manager, and it was completely AI generated. And the guy was responding to a internet lead, and you know he was just talking in a very monotone voice, no emotion at all. He was responding, he was talking about the car, but it's like there's something called uncanny valley where it's detectable, like. It's, you know, it's AI.
Right.
It was real. And I think in another 5 or 10 years, you won't be able to tell, when it's a real person. But, I don't think we will see, based on what I know about Damien, we won't see a, Damien Boudreaux.
Hi, Bach.
Although
I think he's already a.
Chris, were you able to grab any of those questions?
Yes. The question that we had off LinkedIn, this comes from Dave Sponicky, founder and CEO of Reunion Marketing. And he asked, in your opinion, what is the single most important trait that top salespeople share?
Just believing in themselves, I think is probably the biggest deal. When you deal with a high performer, they're confident in the fact that they're looking at things through the client's perspective. They're looking to solve the problem. I feel like, you know, the confidence level that they have, because they know they're intentional on what they're doing, is really what the difference is. Because if you're not truthful and you're not honest and you're not transparent, you'll never be able to continue a certain pattern or a certain, I shouldn't say lies, but certain, you know, tendencies that you may do 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later. If that customer comes back a month from now and you're a totally different person, or customer comes back 3 weeks from now and you have a whole different story. So you'll never get to those ultra high numbers by not being authentic and transparent and intentional in what you do. And I think a lot of high achievers share those familiarities because you're going to get the same person 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, 2 months later, a year later. You're going to see the same value out of that person.
I'm going to give you a different perspective, right? Whether I'm working with a high achieving salesperson or somebody who wants to get to another level in any part of their life, I think there's four ingredients, right? There's four ingredients. The first ingredient has got to be their vision of where they want to go. Their clear, compelling reason of this is what I want, this is what I don't want. They have to have a why. Whether that why is I want a house extrinsically or inside, I want to help people. They have to be aware that this is what they're fighting for, because obstacles are going to show up that knock them off their horse, and they need a focus, right? They can't let life get in their way. And that's how that stops. The second part is the being part of it. They like Ali said, they believe in themselves because they know in themselves, right? They know what they're good at. They know that they're kind and they're thoughtful and they're loving and they're, you know, caring and empathetic and compassionate and understanding and knowledgeable. They have these gifts that they say, this is mine, I'm going to use them on everybody, right? And they kind of know what sharpens their sword and what their sword looks like if you were a sensei, right? The third thing is energy. There's a certain frequency that high achievers have. You know, they don't show up like this very often. They kind of have this movement to them, right? And so high achievers have a frequency that they vibrate at. And that frequency, and I can't think of many times, there's one, I can't think of many times when that wasn't an attractive frequency. They don't attract humans, right? Because of the vibration of their energy. And the fourth one is they're consistent in what they do, their habits, their rituals, their processes, the patterns. They understand the patterns that they have in their life. And once you understand the patterns that I attract truck drivers, right, or I attract people who have tattoos, or I attract, you know, people with pets, or I attract, you know, professionals, right? They understand that their life is filled with patterns. When you can help a high achiever discover those patterns and they get in that river, they fly down that river, right? And, of course, that gets them the answer, right? That all equals accomplishment, productivity, profitability, scalability, and sustainability, right? And so those are the four things I think high achievers have, right?
You know, you guys have a phenomenal blueprint, but the one thing that is required by the salesperson is that they do care, right? And so not everybody in the industry does care. They want to be transactional. They just want to get to that next sale.
Yeah.
So, but the high achievers are the ones that care and that take the necessary steps to do the work. So that's awesome. Really appreciate you guys. Yeah, this is just a gold mine.
Yeah, man, that was amazing.